Today's shiur is Masechta Sota Daf Lamed Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. We had learned in the previous shiur that there were two people that were Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, and the names reflect that. Yosef, as we discussed in the previous shiur, and that's why a hey was added to his name, Yehoisef, and the other individual is Yehuda. Ask the Gemara, Yehuda Maihi, where do we find Yehuda being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim? Says the Gemara, the Tanya. We learned in a Braisa, Hayra Meya Oimer, Sha'amda Yisrael Ala Yom, Bakla Yisrael was standing by the Yamsuf, Hayra Shvatim Menatzchim Zem Ze. There was a debate amongst the Shvatim. Ze Oimer Ani Yairat Chilil Yam. This one said, I will be the first to jump into the Yam. And the other Shevet said, I will be the first to jump into the Yam. Kofatz, Shifta Binyamin, Shev Binyamin jumped in V'yarad L'yam T'chila, and jumped into the Yam first. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Shom Binyamin Tzoyer Roidem. Binyamin, the youngest one, Roidem. Atika Roidem, Ela Radyom. He jumped into the Yam. V'yisari Yehuda Roidem, I say. And the heads of Shevet Yehuda were throwing stones at Binyamin for what he had done. Shnemar Sara Yehuda Rigmosam. Vikach, because Binyamin took this act, Zoch Binyamin Atzadik, Binyamin had the schus, Benasa Eshbil Zichin Lagvura. He was the host for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Oren HaKadosh, the Kadosh HaKadoshim, is in the portion of Binyamin. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, obeyed Kseif of Shochein in Shevet Binyamin. Mefarshim asked, if all the Shvatim wanted to jump into the Yam, so why didn't they all jump into the Yam? The Yam is certainly wide enough, big enough, for all of them to jump into. Why did only Binyamin jump? So one teretz that I saw is that they only wanted to jump together with the Oren of with the Oren, and the Oren, only one of them could carry, and that's why the Gemara says that all of them were debating who should be the one carrying the Oren. Another teretz that the Iyun Yaakov gives is that the Pasuk says Dabra b'nei Yisrael v'yisol v'yivor b'nei Yisrael b'soy chayom, and the question is obvious: why does the Pasuk have to use the word B'nei Yisrael twice? Teaches us the Pasuk that the Pasuk is telling us that only one Shevet would be the one to jump into the Yam, and here we have a debate who should be that Shevet. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says a different teretz. He says that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu had explicitly told them to jump into the Yam, every Jew is prepared to follow what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, even if it means jumping into the Yam and taking one's life. However, here we had a very unique situation. Here he told them to jump into the Yam and continue living. That, to live with that kind of emuna that a person should have, that he's going to jump into the Yam and survive, that only Shevet Binyamin or Shevet Yehuda were worthy of. And in fact, the Iyun Yaakov says, because according to this man, the Omer, Shevet Binyamin jumped in first, that's why the first king that Klal Yisrael had, Shaul HaMelech, came from Shevet Binyamin to mark this tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. The Mefarshim also point out, if the other Shvatim were upset that Binyamin jumped in, why do we only find that Yehuda threw stones at them, no other Shevet? So Mefarshim explained, because all the other Shvatim felt that even though they were upset that Binyamin jumped into the Yam first, there was never a right for one Jew to throw stones at another Jew. Only Shevet Yehuda felt that because what Binyamin did, that they have a right to throw stones at them. It's interesting to note that Tosfos quotes a medrash that gives a mashal to what happened between Yehuda Binyamin at the Yam. He says, what happened was that it was a king who had two sons, a younger son and an older son. And he told the younger son, I want you to wake me up early in the morning by the nates. And he told the older son, I want you to wake me up later in the day. So the younger son, following his father's directions, as soon as the nates came, went to wake up his father. But the older son did not allow him. He said, the father said, told me that he should be woken up later. This is what happened between Yehuda and Binyamin. Binyamin wanted to jump into the Yam earlier than Yehuda was prepared to jump into the Yam, because they both felt that they were fulfilling what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. And the Meroime Sada explains what does this mean. We know that the Pasuk says that entire night there was a Ruach Azah, a strong wind blowing. What was the strong wind accomplishing? It was causing that the water in the Yamsuf should recede. And Yehuda felt that whatever will cause that there should be less of an open miracle is better, because that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu typically operates. And therefore we should wait for a later time until we jump into the Yam. Binyamin, on the other hand, felt that it would be a bigger Kiddush Hashem where there is a bigger amount of water, and still that there will be Kriyas Yamsuf, and that was the basis of their debate. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says, Loi kacha yamais, and as the Mefarshim explain that Rabbi Yehuda and Rameya had Kabbalahs, had traditions from their Rebbeim, exactly what happened by Yamsuf, and what he said was happened. This trap said, I will not be the first to jump in. And so too did the other Shvatim say that we won't be the first to jump in. Kofatz Nachshon Menadov from Shevet Yehuda jumped in. As the pasuk says, Sivavuni b'kachash Ephraim u'b'mirma beis Yisrael, I was surrounded with falsehood and deceit. V'Yehuda oid rad im keil, and Yehuda had faith and jumped in. For Allah mefarsh b'kabbalah, and regarding him, the pasuk says that when Nachshon ben Aminadav jumped into the Yam, he said, "Hashe'enu elikim kivo mayim ad nofesh." I jumped in with nothing to help me. And he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save him. What does it mean that Nachshon and Aminadav, they were surrounded with falsehood? So I saw two pshatim. One pshat is the simple pshat that we're learning, that the other shvatim refused to jump into the Yam. But the Mashal says, as we know the Medrash says, that when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, and even when they jumped into the Yamsuf, they had with them Pesel Michoy, and that was what he was complaining about, that even in such an important time, they still carried with them the Pesel Michoy. But Yehuda was ready to jump. Why was Nachshon and Aminadav prepared to jump more than everyone else? He says, because the Pasuk says, V'yivoyu b'nei Yisrael b'yabosha b'soy chayom. So all the other Shvatim interpreted the Pasuk as it means simply that they are not to enter the Yam until it is dried, until there's dry land to walk on. Yehuda, however, held Nachshon ben Aminadav v'yivoyu b'soy chayom. First they should go into the Yam when it's still Yam, when it's still a sea, and only afterwards, be yabosha, will it turn into dry land. Baishasha, when Klal Yisrael was standing there by Yamsuf, Hay Moshe Marach B'Tfilah, Moshe Rabbeinu was davening. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, Yedidai Toivim Mayom, my dear friends, Klal Yisrael are drowning in the Yam, V'Ata Marach B'Tfilah L'Fonai, and now is the time to daven. As the Mashal says, that when one is b'shas sakana, it's not the time to daven, it's the time to do. D'sharm b'tzion b'alocha, I saw, says another beautiful pshat. He says, sometimes the thing to do is to daven. And sometimes when there's really a sorrow, davening is not enough. And what is required is action. And that was the lesson that was being said then. It's not just enough to daven. It's now is a time where action is required. Maisim toivim. Amal fanav. Rebbeinu shel olam. Omar b'yadei lasis. So he says, what do you want I should do? Amam daba b'nei yisrov v'yisov. V'ata hamres matcha neteis yotcha. Lefikach. Because Yehuda was the first one to jump into the yam. Zocha Yehuda lasis memshal b'yisrov. They were the first one to be, they were the kings in Klal Yisrael. Shnema hoisi Yehuda l'kotshoi Yisrov mam shalaisov. Matam hoisi Yehuda l'kotshoi Yisrov mam shalaisov. Why was Yehuda worthy of being the king in Klal Yisrael? Because he saw the yam and jumped into it. Mefarshim point out that we have here a machloikis, Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, who jumped into the yam first. According to Reb Meir, it was Binyamin. And that's what the Gemara says, that the Kodesh HaKadoshim was in Chelek Binyamin. But how will we understand that placement of the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the portion of Binyamin if we follow the opinion that Yehuda was the first to jump into the yam? So Mefarshim explained that the Gemara says in Masechta Yuma, the Gemara Masechta Yuma gives a different explanation of who, of why Binyamin had the Kodesh HaKadoshim in his portion. And the Gemara there says that the reason is because they were upset when they saw that the Mizbeach was not in their portion, that the Mizbeach was in the portion of Binyamin, the portion of Yehuda. So the Mefarshim explained that really this machloikis is the machloikis, the difference of opinion between our Gemara and the Gemara in Masechta Yuma really is the machloikis that we have, is really this machloikis. The Gemara Masechta Yuma that says that the reason it wasn't dear chelik is because they were upset that the Mizbech wasn't in dir chelik. So that's why the Gemara, so that Gemara holds that Yehuda jumped in first. Our Gemara that holds that Binyamin jumped in first says the reason is because Binyamin jumped into the yam first. The other question that the Mefarshim asked is that if Yehuda was not the one to jump in first, it was Binyamin that jumped in first, so then why was indeed Yehuda Zoicha, that his name should be Yehuda and that he should have the Malchus? So I saw two answers. One answer is because, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, Yehuda was the one that was prepared to be Maisa Nefesh. Yehuda, by the story of Tamar, admitted to his wrongdoing. And another teretz is because in our Gemara, even if Yehuda wasn't the first one to jump in, he was ready to be Maisa Nefesh on behalf of jumping in, and therefore he was still worthy to have the melucha given to him. Farshim also point out, we had learned earlier that kasha zvuga shel adam kriyas yamsuf, a shidduch is as difficult as kriyas yamsuf, and they point out that from our Gemara we see that what was the defining characteristic of kriyas yamsuf, that they jumped in. That sometimes when it comes to a shidduch, a person isn't quite sure, should he or shouldn't he do the shidduch, he has to kafatz, jump in. Gemara continues in describing what happened by Har Grizim and Har Evel. Tanya Belezer ben Yaakov Omer, Yef Shalem Levi Lamato. The Braisa is faced with a serious question. On one hand, it says that Shevi Levi was between the mountains saying the brachas are klolos. Says the Gemara, that's difficult to say. Shekfa nem lamala. It says that they were on top of Har Grizim. On the other hand, v'yashalayim lamala. We can't say that Shevet Levi was on top of Har Grizim. Shekfa nem lamata. We know that they were between the two mountains. Ha ketzad. How do we reconcile this? Zikni kahuna levi lamata. The zakenim of Shevet Levi and the kahanim were the ones that were between the mountains saying the brachas for klolos, Vashar, and the rest of the Shevet, Lamala was on top of Har Griz. Rabbi Yoshi gives a different teretz. Kol Aroi L'Sharis, anyone who was able to be of age to carry the Oren, the Levim between the age of 30 and 50, they were Lamata. They were between the mountains. Vashar, and the rest of the Shevet was Lamala. Tosfos quotes a Yerushalmi that gives a different teretz. Tosfos says that the Pasuk says that Shevet Shimon was Lamala, and if Shevet Shimon was Lamala, and the Pasuk says that Shevet Levi was Lamala, they both must have been the exact same, all of them being Lamala on Har Gerizim. How do we explain this psukim that part of the Levim were between the mountains? Says Tosfos, that as we have quoted earlier in the Amasechta, that the Levim are sometimes called Kohanim. When the Pasuk uses the word Levi, it really means Kohanim. This is one such circumstance, and it was the Kohanim who were between the mountains and the Levim who were on top of the mountains. Continues the Gemara. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi, and this is the way the Mefarshim explained Rabbi's opinion, they say that everybody was Lamata. The Levim and the rest of Klal Yisrael all were Lamata. And therefore, the question that we have, where was Levi, on top or on bottom, is no longer a question. Because everybody, even Klal Yisrael, and certainly the Levim, were all Lamata. Just what happened was, they've turned towards Hagrezim or Pasuk B'Bracha, and then they started saying the Bracha, and then they turned Klapi Ha'arival or Pasuk B'Klal, and they said the Klala. The Pasuk says Al, that they were on the mountain. Al, what does Al mean? The Samach, they were near the mountain, but not actually on the mountain. Ketanya, and the Gemara brings a proof that when we use the word Al, it can mean nearby. The Pasuk says, V'nasata al Marechas, that on the Shulchan, when they put the Lechem upon him, they should put Levana Zaka. Again, Rebbe says, Rebbe Omer, it doesn't mean actually on tap. Al Basamach, it means nearby. At the Omer Al Basamach, Ayena El Mamish, maybe Al doesn't mean nearby, it has to be on top of. Shoimer, there's another Pasuk. The Pasuk says, V'sakhoisal Oren, that the Proiches should be on top of the Oren. But we know that the Proiches wasn't on top of the Oren. The Proiches served as the Mechitza between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So what does Al mean? It means Al B'Samach, that it was nearby to the Oren. Here too, Al means nearby. And as the Mefarshim explained, certainly Rebbe agrees that the word Al means on top of. However, when we're faced with a dilemma and we don't know how to explain a pasuk, explaining and defining the word Al to mean nearby is an acceptable definition. However, the Mefarshim go on to say, because Rebbe says that the word Al could legitimately mean nearby, so he says that because Al could legitimately mean nearby, therefore in the case where something was supposed to be put on top of something else, and instead of putting it on top, he put it nearby, it would be halachically acceptable. And I saw a number of situations where this is applied lahalacha. The Pesachei Tshuva in Hilchas Mezuzah quotes a gra that says, since it says in the Pasuk, in Krishma, Uchsaftam al Mezuzah, that Beisecha Sherecha, that the Mezuzah should be put on the doorway, so the gra says that the mezuzah should not be wrapped in a paper, the mezuzah should not be put into a mezuzah case, because it doesn't reflect Al, that it's actually on the doorway. Rav Chaim Kanievsky quotes the Chazon Ish as saying that it's not true, that the Gra did not hold this way. The Poskim, which is Al Minig, that we do put the mezuzah, we wrap it in a piece of paper or in a plastic, and we put it into a mezuzah case, say, what do we do with the words of the Pasuk, Uchsaftam Al, that it should be on the doorway. So they say the explanation is as we're learning in our Gemara, because here we're saying Al doesn't mean have to actually on, it can mean nearby. Another place that I saw that this subject is spoken about, La'alocha, we know that the tefillin are supposed to be on one's hand, on one's ear. What would be the halacha if there's some sort of a chatzitza? So Avada the Mishnah Berurah speaks very strongly that there should be no chatzitza between the tefillin and the head and the hand. However, says the Paiskim, that if one did put the tefillin on the hand or on the hair, it still perhaps would be acceptable. Would be acceptable because al means nearby. So the pasuk continues, hapchu p'neim klapei ha'grizim or pasuk v'bracha. They turned to ha'tzad grizim and they said a bracha. Tana rabbanan. So we learned in a brisa, baruch b'chlal. There is a bracha, a general bracha for one who fulfills what it says in the Torah, or baruch b'frat. And there's specific bracha for every mitzvah in the Torah that one fulfills. Similarly, or b'chlal, if one violates the Divrei Torah, there's a general curse for what he did, and or b'frat, and there's a specific curse for violating every aveira. And the Mashal explains, why do we need to have both a baruch b'chlal and a baruch b'frat, and an or b'chlal and or b'frat? So he says, the Gemara says, bo Chabakuk v'midim al achas, v'tzadik b'munoso yichya. Chabakuk said, if he summarized what is all of Torah and mitzvahs about, having amuna. So he explains as follows. Having amuna is why is a general description of why one should do or mitzvahs, one should not violate an aveira. Then those obligations are broken down into mitzvahs, specific mitzvahs and specific aveiras. And that's exactly what happened here. There's one, a general bracha, a general klala regarding a muna that a Jew has to believe that he has to do what a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, and then there are specific mitzvahs and aveiras. The Ben Yoyada asks, then why do we have to have both bracha and klala? If there's a bracha for one who does the mitzvahs and doesn't violate the aveiros, it's obvious that there will be a klala if he doesn't do the mitzvahs and violates the aveiros. So one teretz he gives is because the pasuk wants to be explicit, not just rely on us extrapolating that. Another teretz is specifically for the rishon who always want to find a reason not to do mitzvahs and do aveiros. So we have to be explicit. What are the repercussions of doing aveiros? But then he says, one more teretz. We know that many times people get punishment in this world, but the schar for the mitzvahs that they did, they will only get in the next world. So that's why we have to specify separately the Oror and the Baruch, because the Oror and the Baruch are not necessarily given at the same time. The Oror could be B'olam Hazeh, and the Baruch could be B'olam Haba. Continues the Gemara, for every mitzvah we have the obligation of Lilmud Lamed, to learn what we're supposed to do, Lamed, to teach, Lishmar means to watch, not to violate the Averis, Ulasois, and actually do the mitzvahs. That applies to every mitzvah. Mashal says tishmar means it's not enough to learn, but one has to review what he learned to make sure that he follows properly. And that's why every mitzvah has these four concepts attached to it. So now the Gemara makes the following calculation. So this is arba. We just spoke about four concepts: lima lamed, lishma velasis. And the first one point out, now we could understand why the Gemara Tosfos says that a mitzvah that is only given to kahanim is not considered a mitzvah she'en shav b'kol. It's not considered a mitzvah that doesn't apply to all of Klal Yisrael. And the question is obvious: if it's a mitzvah that only applies to kahanim, it's certainly very limited. Why is it not considered a mitzvah she'en shav b'kol? The answer is because maybe we who are not kohanim cannot actually fulfill the mitzvah, but the lumad alamed, to learn and teach and help others fulfill the mitzvah, certainly applies to everyone, and therefore it's considered a mitzvah shavah klal. Now continues the Gemara with the following calculation: arba v'arba harei shmoina. There are brachas for klalos. There are four meaning two brachas and two klolos regarding learning, and there are two brachas and two klolos regarding teaching, which will be a total of eight. Shmaina. Then we have another four brachas and klolos for the lishmar velasis. There's another eight. Harei shesh esrei. So we have a total of 16 times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to be mekayim the mitzvah. They came to Sinai. The same thing happened by Har Sinai. This happened by Har Sinai, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us all the mitzvahs of Eris, and we came of Smoiv, and the same thing happened by Smoiv. Shnema, as the pasuk says, Eilu divrei habris asher tziva Hashem es Moshe, v'ksiv v'shmatem es divrei habris hazois. So if we have the Torah being taught us three times, and each time, as we just made the calculation, we have 16. So 16 times 3 is 48. Nimtzo, Abba, Shema, and Brises are mitzvah. There are 48 brisim set on every mitzvah or mitzvah. Rav Shimon agrees to the number 48. However, he's mighty Hagrizim and Har-Evel, that Hagrizim and Har-Evel is not one of the places where this bris, where the 48 was included. Rather, he has Oil Moichim and Midbar as one of those spots. But they both agree to the number of 48. And the Farshim, in fact, explained, now that we saw that there are 48 brisim involved in being Mekayim the Torah, now we understand why the Mishnah, the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos, says that there are 48 ways Shatoira Niknas Behen, corresponding to this number 48. The Mefarshim also go on to say that we know that tzaddikim are called Anshei Chayil, a woman who acts properly is called an Eishes Chayil. Chayil is Begematria 48. For these people are fulfilling the 48 brisim. The Mefarshim discuss the why indeed did the Torah have to be given in three spots. So one opinion is because one is for Torah Shebiksav, the other is for Mishnah, and the other is for Gemara. The Shem Shmuel explains the one what was given by Har Sinai represents the Seichel, that we understood what we have to do. Doel Moyed represents the Nefesh, we're like the Kabbonis, which represent Mesiris Nefesh, that the animal is offered, we have to be prepared to offer ourselves for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Avos Moiv represents the Guf, that we should actually fulfill the mitzvahs. So we had here a Machloikis, what are the three places where the bris was made. One opinion held Sinai Oil Moihed and Avos Moiv, and the other opinion held Sinai, Arvis Moyev, and Hagrizim and Ha'evel. Says the Gemara, what is this machloikis based on? Ubeplukta the Hanitanoi. The Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Klolos Nemru B'Sinai. All of the mitzvahs were just said in a general way at Har Sinai. Uprotois, and the individual mitzvahs were said by Oil Moed. So really, Oil Moed and Har Sinai are not two separate areas. They're really one. One is a continuation of the other. Rabbi Kiva, however, holds klolos uprotos nemnu b'Sinai. All of the general rules and the specifics were said in Har Sinai. V'nishnu, and then they were repeated ba'oil moed, and then v'nishtalshun, they were said a third time by Avos Moiv. So this opinion of Rabbi Kiva has the three places: a Sinai, oil moed, and Avos Moiv. The other opinion says that Sinai and Oil Moed are really one and the same, and therefore they will have Har Grizim and Har Evel as the third time. Says the Gemara, Vein l'chol kol dvar mitzvah u'mitzvah shiksuv b'Torah. There is no mitzvah mentioned in the Torah shaloi nichrus ha'alel arba v'shmonim brises. There were 48 brises for every mitzvah, as we just learned. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda ish kvar akoy oimer v'shem Rav Shimon ein lecha mitzvah shiksuv b'Torah. Every mitzvah in the Torah shalei nechus ha'aleh arboim v'shmoin b'risis, there were 48 times sheish meis elef u'shloishis alofim chamesh meis, 603,550, which would amount the people that were in Har Sinai. That's the amount of b'risis. We multiply that number by 48. What is the Machloikis, Omer Rebbe, Ladiv Reb Shimon Yehuda Ish Kfar Akoy, Mishum Shama Mishum Reb Shimon, אין לך קומץ ומצו תאי של נכס עליה עם שמונה בריסס ששלוש מאיס ושלושת אלוף וחמש מאה וחמישים נמצא כל אחד מישראל. We have every Jew שש מאיס אלף ושש אלוף וחמש מאה וחמישים. Every Jew is bound by 603,550 בריסים. My בנאיו, what are the two questions? What are the two opinions here? What is the two opinions in understanding Rav Shimon? Amar Masharsha. So Rav Masharsha explains, Arva the Arva, Va'arva the Arva Ikbenayu. We know there's a concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh. Every Jew is responsible for each other. The question here, however, is how far does that go? The first opinion holds that you're only obligated to make sure that your fellow Jew does the mitzvah. But you're not obligated to be a guarantor for the guarantee that one Jew has to the other. And the other mandama says that the obligation includes even a guarantee that not only your fellow Jew should do the mitzvah, but you have to guarantee that your fellow Jew makes his fellow Jew do mitzvahs and not do averus also. What is the nafkamina? So the simple nafkamina is that how far and how deep is this concept of arvus? The first mandama says it's not as deep as the other. However, the Rosh, the Taisvus Rosh, gives a different explanation. He says, let's say a Jew, Rachmana Litzlan, did an avera, and then he passes away before he was punished. If we don't say arva the arva, so that Jew passed away, but nobody else will be responsible to receive that punishment. But if we apply the concept of arva the arva, then not only then the remaining Jews who are alive will have to carry the responsibility for the punishment that that Jew did not receive for doing the avera. There's a fundamental machloikis in understanding arvus. The Rosh says that arvus doesn't apply to women. And in fact, the Beis Yitzchak has a gval de geraya that arvus doesn't apply to women. Because our Gemara, when it speaks about arvus, speaks only about 603,550. We know that that was the amount of men that there were there, but not the amount of women. So the Rosh, as explained by the Noi de Yehuda, says that the entire concept of arvus doesn't apply by women. And therefore, a woman can't be mitzi a man, a mitzvah, and vice versa. Rabbi Kiva Eger disagrees with this understanding of the Rosh, and he says that only by mitzvahs, which women are not obligated to do, there is there no concept of arvus. Because what is the concept of arvus? That I have an obligation to do the mitzvah, and you have the obligation to do, and then because you have the obligation, I have to make sure you do the mitzvah. But that's only in a mitzvah that I myself am obligated to do. But mitzvahs that I'm not obligated to do, there is no arvus. But according to the Kiva Eger's explanation of the Rosh, if there's a mitzvah that women are obligated to do, then men and women, then there is arvus even by women. And perhaps this machloikis, really the understanding of this machloikis, is based on a machloikis Rashi and Ran. What does arvus mean? Rashi says that arvus means that I have to make sure that the other person does the mitzvah. The Ran, on the other hand, explains that arvus means that until my fellow Jew fulfilled the mitzvah, I haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. If he didn't do the mitzvah, I'm not obligated to do the mitzvah. So we could perhaps say, Rabbi Kiva Eger holds like the Ran, only by mitzvahs that I'm obligated. So if my fellow didn't do it, I didn't do it. But if I don't have to do it, the fact that he didn't do it should not make it any worse than if I didn't do it, and I don't have to do it. Rashi, however, says that the pshat of arvus is that one is responsible for the other. And now the Rosh is telling us that that's only by men, not by women. Also interesting to note that the Eretz Tzvi, the Kozlo Gerov, in Shalos Tshuvos Eretz Tzvi, says that there is no arvus by children under 20 years old. with the same explanation that the Beis Yitzchak gave. Because the concept of Arvus we're learning in our Gemara from men who were counted in the Midbar. That's the number of 603,000, which were men only above the age of 20. And therefore, somebody under the age of 20 is not included in Arvus. There's also Machlokes Rishonim, if Arvus applies to Gerim. Most Paiskim hold that Arvus does apply to Gerim. And the reason they're not in the count, because we didn't know how many Gerim will be included. There's also Machloikis HaPoiskim, if by Mitzvahs Durabonon, is there a concept of Arvus? The Prima Godem says that by Mitzvahs Durabonon, there is a concept of Arvus. The Zera of Rom disagrees, and he says that Arvus is only by Mitzvahs Doraisa, not by Mitzvahs Durabonon. Says the Gemara, Dorosh Rabbi Yehuda ben Nachmeni Meturgmei Derashim ben Lakish. Kol HaParsha Kula Loi Nemra. The entire Parsha, which speaks about different klolos, are referring to Noyef and Ephes, people who violated adultery. Ask the Gemara, why makes you say it? Because the Pasuk says, Ora Sheyasa Pesel Umesecha. The Pasuk says that somebody who makes a statue will be cursed. Says the Gemara, if somebody makes a statue, he'll be cursed. But Ari Sagale, he's Mechoyev Skila. That's how some Rishonim learn. But the Rishonim say that's difficult to understand, because we know that a Noyef v'Noyefes are also Mechoyev Mises Bezdin if they have an adulterous relationship. So what's the Gemara's question that we can't say it's Pasha Pshat? It means somebody who's Oved Avodah Zarah. Because Oved Avodah Zarah doesn't just get cursed. He's Mechoyev Misa. So too, somebody who does adultery doesn't just get cursed. He's Mechoyev Misa. So the Mefarshim explain. Somebody who's Oved Avodah Zarah doesn't have a shear in Olam Haba. He's completely distanced from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So saying that someone is just going to get an Oror doesn't make sense on Oved Avodah Zarah. It must be that the parasha is referring to a Noyef v'Neyefes. And what does it mean? El Zabah al Erva v'Hoyle Ben. Somebody had relations with a married woman and had a child. V'Hoyle Ben Erva Kechavim. Given that that child is a mamzer who cannot marry a regular Jewish woman, he now goes and lives amongst the Goyim. And because he lives amongst the Goyim, Ovar Avaris Kechavim, Arurim, Ovar V'Ima Shazer, his parents, although they did not worship Avodah Zarah, they caused that Avodah Zarah should be worshipped by a Jew, Shekar Garmalo, and that's why they are cursed. Tarabon, says the Braisa, Nusates Abrocha Al Agrizim, Vesaklola Al Har Evil. Ma Tamalim, what is the Pasuk? Is it to teach us that the bracha was said, as we learned earlier, on Har Grizim and the klal on Har Evil? Hare kana nava. We already learned Elu Yam de Levarach Sam al Har Grizim. V'ksiv ve'elu Yam de la klal b'Har Evil. So why does the pasuk need to repeat it? L'hagdim bracha l'klala. First, a bracha was said before a klal was said. Yochel ye kala brachas kaidim klalas. Perhaps we would suggest that all of the brachas were mentioned, and only after completing mentioning the brachas were the klalas said. Tamloima bracha uklala. Bracha achas. First one bracha was said, and then kadems laklala, and then the next klala was, then a klala was said, and so on, a bracha of a klala. Ven kala brachas kaidimus laklalas, but not all of the brachas should be mentioned before beginning any klalos. Ola hakish bracha leklal loy malach ma klala b'levim. The pasuk says that the levim should say the klalos af bracha b'levim. The levim said the klalos. Or ma klala, as the pasuk said, should be said b'kol rom after bracha should be said b'kol rom in a loud voice. Or ma klala was said b'loshen hakodesh, as we began this sugya, that the brachas for klolos had to be said specifically in Lashon HaKodesh. Af bracha had to be said in Lashon HaKodesh. Oma bracha b'klala prat, as we learned, there was a general klala and then specifics. Af bracha, there was klal uprat. Oma klala, elu ve'elu Einim v'Einrim Amen. Everybody had to say Amen after the bracha of Klala, after the Klalas. At bracha, everybody had to say Elu v'Elu Einrim Amen. They had to say Amen after the brachas was said. The Mefarshim point out that there were 11 Klalas said. What does the 11 Klalas represent? We have a Klala corresponding to every Shevet, except for Shevet Shimon, because we know that Shevet Shimon did not get a bracha. So since Shevet Shimon did not get a bracha, it's only fair they should also not get a klala. The bracha and klala, the Mefarshim discuss. One of them is Baruch Or Ashlo Yochem as Divrei Torah Zois, and the Mefarshim say from here we learn how much respect has to be given to Torah. And if Chas V'Shalom, this is the basis, that if Chas V'Shalom, a Sefer Torah falls, the people who are present when it Chas V'Shalom falls have to fast. Because the Torah says, Ora Shalom Yochem et Divrei Torah Zois, how careful we have to be with the covet of Torah, and therefore anything that represents disrespect to the Torah, Ora is represented with a Klala. And of course, it goes the other way, that if somebody is mekabel on himself and somebody is mechabed the Torah, he will get the tremendous bracha of Baruch Ashiyokim as Divrei HaTorah HaZois.